Well, the last few weeks have been eventful ones at the state capitol. Michigan legislators strongly considered measures involving education and phone service, among others. They passed controversial measures involving abortion insurance, medical marijuana, and others. And here to review some of those and to look back a bit on other 2013 Michigan news, we welcome MLive reporter Jonathan Osting, Susan Demas, owner-publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, and Zach Gorchow, editor of Gongwer News. Welcome back, one and all.
Morning.
Good to see you. The Republican majority legislature pretty strongly disagreed with the Republican Secretary of State's proposal to identify donors to issue ads. Remind our listeners why legislators appear to disagree with Ruth Johnson. They're on the same team, aren't they?
Well, they are, but Republican legislators feel strongly that donors to these issue ads should be able to remain anonymous. That they are saying, well, this is a matter of free speech, that if you are known to be donating to these issue ads, which, to remind people, are ads where you don't expressly say vote for or against a candidate, but they look exactly like a campaign ad. It'll say, you know, Jane Smith is great or Jim Smith is terrible and so forth. And they, you know, are saying this is a matter of free speech. These are issue ads. The reality is that there is a donor community out there that wants to be able to contribute large sums of money into campaigns and remain anonymous.
Let's listen to Rich Robinson, who was a visitor on Current State not too long ago, Rich of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Here, Rich explains his take on the relevance of the Citizens United ruling regarding campaign finance.
Let me quote, "The First Amendment protects political speech, and disclosure permits citizens and shareholders to react to the speech of corporate entities in a proper way. This transparency makes the character, or allows the electorate to make informed decisions and give proper weight to different speeches and messages." This part of Citizens United was very clear. If there's any ambiguity, it's about what is or is not an issue advertisement or an issue message.
Susan Demas, what do you think?
Well, this has been the trend in politics ever since Citizens United, where anonymous donors are protected, and we see more and more money flowing in the system. It used to be the competitive congressional race might reach $1 million. Now that's kind of your opening bid. These races tend to be about $5 million. The U.S. Senate race that we'll see in Michigan could top $20 million. And a lot of times we will have no idea who is giving the money for these races. So in a way, this is just codifying the pattern for national and state politics for many, many years.
Jonathan, I'm wondering if you could help clarify Ruth Johnson's role in this. This started with the Secretary of State, and the legislature kind of took over. Did she punt on this or what?
Well, it actually started with the State Bar of Michigan. They requested Ruth Johnson take a look at the existing rule and see whether judicial elections specifically should, if issue ads should be allowed to play a role in those elections. Ruth Johnson said she couldn't look at just judicial elections, but she turned it around and proposed a rule that would require disclosure for any election season ads, so 30 days before a primary, 60 days before a general election, whether or not they use words like vote for or vote against. Ruth Johnson is the first to propose the administrative rule. Terry Lynn Land in 2006 also actually recommended that the legislature do something similarly. Mm-hmm. They never did. Ruth Johnson took matters into her own hands. The very next day, Republicans amended the bill to counteract what she was trying to do.
And what's being referred to an awful lot here is the fact that Governor Snyder campaigned on a platform of greater transparency, but he's been making sounds recently as if he may sign this.
Well, it wasn't just that he campaigned on transparency. I mean, he had put out a white paper that specifically said issue ads should be subject to the same disclosure as your standard campaign contribution. I mean, there was no ambiguity whatsoever. It's very clear he is laying the groundwork to walk that back and sign this bill. At least it sure seems that way. He is talking about, well, I've learned some things since I've been in office about the way things work. He's using this free speech argument. But it appears this is going to be one of the bigger flip-flops, if you will, of the Rick Snyder era.
He also did not take any political action committee money as well. That was a big part of his campaign. And then we've seen that he's had this nerd fund. So this kind of goes part and parcel with that.
Can you argue that, especially if Mr. Snyder signs the campaign reform measure, can you argue that Rick Snyder moved farther right in 2013?
Well, I mean, that's one issue of many. Obviously, with Medicaid expansion, people might say he took a step back towards the middle there, going against some of the far-right elements of his own party to expand access under the Affordable Care Act.
Common Core standards?
Core standards, yeah. I mean, I don't think you can look at just one issue and make that judgment call.
Okay. Also, just last week, let's talk about the timeline. Is the timeline important here?
In terms of signing the campaign finance bill?
Yeah.
Well, he has 14 days to do it. I think it's important because there's two Fridays in that window, and we might see this signed on a Friday afternoon to try and avoid a lot of media scrutiny. That's just a guess.
Also, just last week, the legislature easily passed a citizen ballot initiative undertaken by Michigan Right to Life that foremost removes abortion coverage from standard health insurance policies. The governor's not on the hot seat here since it was a citizen initiative, so it just became law. This debate got quite dramatic, arguably most dramatic, when Senate Majority Leader Gretchen Whitmer of East Lansing characterized the measure as requiring rape insurance. Here's the senator.
And for those of you who want to act aghast that I'd use a term like rape insurance to describe the proposal here in front of us, you should be even more offended that it's absolutely accurate description of what this proposal requires. This tells women that were raped and became pregnant that they should have thought ahead and bought special insurance for it.
The majority went on to pass this measure. Susan Demas, do you expect repercussions?
Well, what this does is take the issue off the table for the 2014 election. If the legislature had not acted, then citizens would have had to vote on it, which potentially could have helped Democratic turnout. So potentially Democrats might turn out more because they're upset about this, but there's a long way to go before 2014. I think probably the most surprising thing about this debate was that Senator Whitmer actually disclosed that she had been raped. And that was a very emotional speech to hear on the floor. It did not change the outcome, but there were several women and men who shared their personal stories. And certainly there are a lot of people who feel strongly about this in the electorate.
What men shared their stories?
Senator Jim Ananick talked about the fact that he and his wife had suffered a miscarriage.
Okay. Any other response to that very dramatic debate?
Well, I mean, I think it definitely left a lot of people pretty stunned when Senator Whitmer gave her speech. But it did not move votes. The legislature has a very solid majorities in both houses of members who have been endorsed by Right to Life of Michigan. And, while there was some discomfort maybe among some sectors of, staff and leadership about what the political ramifications of this might be, for the rank and file members on the Republican side, this was, they were going to vote for this, no speech was going to change their mind.
Mm-hmm. In terms of 2014, there is some talk about trying to put together another petition drive for a referendum. I believe Planned Parenthood, ACLU, were meeting this week to discuss whether they were going to move forward with that effort. And again, the ramifications for 2014 aren't entirely clear. Abortion as a wedge issue has traditionally benefited pro-life candidates, but opponents of this measure will point out that this isn't just about abortion insurance. It's about interfering in the private marketplace, and polling showed that it was pretty unpopular.
Has anyone looked at the cost of what this rider would be?
There's not a lot of information out there. You've heard people say that in the handful of other states that have similar laws that it's a little bit hard to find them. And the insurance companies in Michigan, the HMOs, Blue Cross, are all basically saying, we don't know what this is. We're looking at the law. We're not sure what we're going to offer. We don't know what it's going to cost. You know, according to the Department of Community Health, something like 3% of abortions in Michigan right now are paid by insurance, that most of them are paid out of pocket, as is. So it's really unknown territory. The law takes effect March 14th, presuming there is no referendum, and it's going to be uncharted territory at that point.
We're talking about the December, and well, we will be talking more about what happened previously in 2013 here with Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News, Susan Demas of Inside Michigan Politics, and Jonathan Osting of MLive. The latest survey numbers from last week's State of the State survey showed the governor rebounding in his approval ratings from the drop a year ago after Right to Work. Admittedly, this was only up to a 35% approval, but that's still high enough to win re-election, according to Charlie Ballard, the director of the State of the State survey. How damaging to the governor's re-election campaign could these two measures that we've been talking about, how damaging could they be?
Well, because Rick Snyder didn't have to sign the abortion legislation, and he actually vetoed that last year, he has an out with that one. So I think that's positive. As far as campaign finance goes, that tends to be inside baseball. Most people don't tend to vote on campaign finance issues, so I think he's okay. I think more salient issues will be the pension tax. Even though that was 2011, people are still not very happy, and we have to pay our taxes every year, so you get a reminder. And potentially Right to Work and some of those other lame duck issues that went through at a very fast pace in 2012. But I think the State of the State survey reflects what a lot of polling has shown, that Rick Snyder's numbers are on the upswing, however modestly.
I'm so curious. Those you spend time at the Capitol, do legislative Republicans, do you pick up the feeling that legislative Republicans feel that they are vulnerable next year?
I don't think so. I think, you know, there's always a sense that you can't take things for granted, that, you know, you've got to work hard, you've got to do all the things. But if you look at the dynamics today, it looks like a pretty favorable environment for Republicans. Number one, it's the non-presidential election year, which for the last 20 years, with one exception, has been very favorable climate for Republicans in Michigan. Fewer Democrats turn out, and they have done very well. You have a president who's a Democrat, and in general, with some exceptions, in the midterm election, the president's party, which in this case, of course, is the Democratic Party, does poorly or worse than the party not in office in the midterm election. And you have the president's popularity numbers are really falling right now in response to what's been going on with the Affordable Care Act. You have a governor who's a Republican seeking re-election. Since we went to the four-year term for governors in the 60s, no Michigan incumbent governor running for a second term has lost, and incumbents overall are 6-1 in that time. So you look at all these dynamics, and I think the Republicans probably feel pretty good about where they're situated.
Jonathan, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I have to agree with Zach. I mean, I think, you know, Democrats are looking at a few seats here and there that they think they can pick up, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to win a majority in either chamber. They actually might have some opportunities in the Senate side, but the majority there is so strong for Republicans that it's actually a super majority right now that Democrats are unlikely to really, you know, make a significant impact there.
Of course, the interesting question, too, is to consider who the Republicans are more vulnerable to, Democrats or Tea Party.
Yeah, sure.
No, I mean
part of this campaign finance bill was actually it was going to allow caucuses to spend during the primary season, and Tea Partiers came out and just blasted that. They called it the Incumbent Protection Act and suggested, you know, House Republican Caucus or House Senate Republican Caucus were trying to protect their own members at the expense of upstart grassroots challengers. That provision was taken out of the bill.
Among everything that happened in 2013 in Michigan, not just at the state capitol necessarily, what do you think you'll remember most vividly from the year?
I will probably remember Senator Whitmer's speech most vividly. I've seen a lot of political speeches, a lot of speeches on the Senate and House floors. That was far and away the most emotional one that I've seen. I think it came as a shock to a lot of people because, you know, we have discussed issues of rape and abortion many times, and this is the first time that Senator Whitmer actually disclosed her own personal history.
Zach, what do you think?
In terms of one moment, there's no doubt that Senator Whitmer's speech was it. As far as overall, kind of the big story of the year, I mean, there were really two big stories. One was the Medicaid expansion debate, which really just dominated everything and is going to be so influential in the elections next year. And then the Detroit bankruptcy was just a constant story, Detroit being put under an emergency manager. That feels like it was 3 years ago now, but it was this year.
And Jonathan?
Yeah, a couple that were mentioned already, but obviously Whitmer's moment was extremely emotional and touching, even though you try and be impartial as a reporter, you couldn't help but feel an emotional response there. As far as the Medicaid debate, Snyder, his famous mantra of take a vote, not a vacation, when the Senate decided to leave town without voting on Medicaid expansion, maybe backfired on him in some respects. I mean, the Senate Republicans did not take too kindly to that, and he ended up, avoiding that phrase in future public speaking events after a discussion with Randy Richardville, but it was certainly memorable.
Certainly. If you had to narrow it down to six words, those were probably the most memorable six words of 2013. So we had another pretty serious dust-up accompanied the move by Republicans to move the Michigan Court of Claims from Ingham County Circuit Court to the State Court of Appeals. Republicans say it's wrong that all the lawsuits coming at the state are decided by only 3% of the state's electorate. Here's a taste of how that played out on Current State.
Yes, it is political maneuvering. When a bill is introduced 2.5 weeks ago that completely revises the entire judicial system of this state, where there was no impact or no input from the Court of Appeals, they weren't even advised of this, where there was no input from us or the Michigan Bar Association, no effort to make up some court rules as to how this is supposed to happen. This was done secretly, quietly, behind the scenes. My information is that this bill has been sitting around for a long time in various forms, and this is the final one. And they were waiting for an opportunity to present it when they thought it was right.
That was Ingham County Circuit Court Judge William Collette. Let's go now to State Senator Rick Jones.
Why would it all be in one county? It makes no sense. It's quite a burden to that county. And I wondered, when did this get changed? Well, it got changed in the 70s. So I contend if there were any political shenanigans, they were done in the 70s when you focused Court of Claims in simply one county.
Again, Judge Collette and Senator Jones, Jonathan Osting, your takeaway from the Court of Claims drama.
Well, Rick Jones is obviously biting the bullet on this one, but I think it's a stretch to suggest that it was simply his idea that came to him and decided like a good time to run it. I mean, obviously political motivations here, and obviously the bill. Some people call it needed a fix or a clarification in at least one area regarding a right to jury trial. So Republicans moved it through, even though they knew that it still needed some work. So there was clearly a rush to get it done by a certain point.
Susan, anything to add there?
Well, we've seen that Republicans have not been thrilled with this Ingham County court setup for a long time. And the right to work bill, actually, it bypassed that initial level so that they didn't have to deal with Judge William Collette in particular, who had knocked down so many of Governor Snyder's proposals. So we kind of had a little foreshadowing there last year that their desire would be to take some action to move some significant cases out of Democratic Ingham County.
And Zach, anything?
I mean,
on
it was point? A it was a brazen political move. I mean, most of the judges on the Ingham Circuit Court either were elected with Democratic backing, were appointed, have clear Democratic ties. Now, of course, they'll say, "Look, I run my run my court in a nonpartisan fashion." But I mean, look, most judges have some political history, and in the case of Ingham County, it's almost overwhelmingly Democratic, and the Republicans, like Susan said, were sick of the way that the Ingham Court was ruling on a lot of these cases. And so they moved it out of there into the Court of Appeals. So this was, for the judiciary in Michigan, this was a real bomb. I mean, people are still trying to figure out the ramifications of this. There are cases all across the state and other circuit courts that are going to go to this new court of claims under this law. It didn't just affect Ingham County. Now, any lawsuit against the state starts in this new court of claims as opposed to the Saginaw Circuit Court or the Wayne Circuit Court and so forth.
What about the 3% argument?
Well, Democrats humorously, I guess, pointed out during the abortion insurance debate that, in fact, fewer than 4% of the state's population signed that, and Republican lawmakers were still happy to, allow their voice to essentially dominate the conversation by approving that bill. It was certainly funny, but I guess it goes both ways. I mean, certainly the Ingham County argument makes sense. Only 3% of the state is represented by those judges, or elects those judges.
We referred to Detroit previously. It was a chaotic year for the city of Detroit. The state filed for bankruptcy. Eligibility for bankruptcy was legally declared by Judge Stephen Rhodes. City voters elected Detroit's first white mayor in decades. As we wrap up 2013, Susan, is there more Detroit controversy behind us or ahead of us?
I think everybody is hoping that it's behind us. There will still be drama because we have to see how the bankruptcy plays out, how it plays out in particular with pensions, which is such a highly politically charged and emotional issue. We also have to see how Mayor Duggan will work with the city council. In the past, the city council has not exactly been a great partner for any mayor. And we have to see how much power Mike Duggan will really have, since there still is an emergency manager in place who really has all the power.
The big moment is yet to come, which is that Kevin Orr, the emergency manager in Detroit, appointed by Governor Snyder, has to propose what's called a plan of action, which is essentially how he plans to try to wipe the slate clean of Detroit's debt, get everything in order financially. And that's going to be brutal. I mean, how is it going to affect pensions? How will the Detroit Institute of Arts be affected? And right on down the line, is this going to be able to set the stage for the city to be on a good financial footing without just creating utter, chaos for retirees and others in the city who count on city services?
I can't help but wonder if it's going to wear thin for Mike Duggan. Here he is, the newly elected mayor of Detroit, and he's in this bizarre role where he's kind of waiting to become the real mayor of the city of Detroit.
Yeah, Duggan actually came and visited Lansing last month, and you could tell he was already a little weary about that discussion. He didn't really know what his power was going to be, and it seemed like it was dawning on him that at least initially, after campaigning so hard for so long, he probably won't have any power initially.
Let's move back to the state one more time, focus to take that statewide approach. Do you expect the Republican legislative agenda to be less controversial in 2014 in an effort to dial down the memory of hot-button topics like the abortion rider right to work? Susan, you alluded to this earlier.
It's an election year, so I don't think we'll see very much done at all besides the budget, which they're constitutionally required to do. Lame duck 2014 will be a lot of fun once the election is over.
Okay. Zach, any thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've talked to folks who have said, they're basically telling, their clients, when I say folks, I mean lobbyists, they're telling their clients, anything that's a really heavy lift is going to have to wait until lame duck. That doesn't mean nothing's going to happen. There will be issues worked on, but the big stuff probably doesn't happen until after the election.
And what kind of shape are our key candidates for office in here at the end of 2013? Let's get away from the governor's race for just one second. Talk about Terry Lynn Landing and Gary Peters.
Gary Peters is kind of the Democratic heir apparent to Carl Levin, although, early polling shows Terry Lynn Land is actually holding her own in that race. These polls are so early, I think, like we see with Mark Schauer on the governor's side, a lot of people don't know who these candidates are yet, and opinions are going to change significantly, I think, over the next year.
What are you going to be watching in 2014 most closely, Susan?
Which race?
Any story, actually.
Any story?
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see how the unemployment issue plays out, because 43,000 Michiganders are losing their benefits in January, and that's something that nobody is talking about.
Zach?
I mean, I think in the end that the governor's race is gonna drown out everything else. I mean, Rick Snyder, there's been so much that's happened the past 3 years that in the end that this election is really going to be a referendum on his era, his first term. And for the Democrats, they absolutely have to find a way to either beat him or win control of the House. So they're looking at another at least two really bad years for them in the legislature.
And Jonathan?
I'm curious to see what happens with gay marriage, gay rights issues in Michigan. You know, there could be an important federal ruling involving Michigan's ban on same-sex marriage. And also, you know, Republican lawmakers are talking about updating the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, although if that happens, it probably won't be until lame duck as well. But in the wake of Dave Ajema's latest anti-gay rhetoric, I think a lot of Republicans are hoping to make a little progress on that issue.
I'll just remind everybody that the federal government has yet to respond to Michigan's health care waiver requests. There hasn't been any yet, and if the answer comes back no, the impact there could be serious impact on Medicaid expansion in Michigan, as I understand it anyway. We want to thank all of our three guests here today. It's been a great discussion. Zach Gorchow is the editor at Gongmer News. Susan Demas is the owner-publisher of Inside Michigan Politics. And Jonathan Osting reports for MLive. Thanks, one and all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.